know if you want to do that now. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to.
Thank him for the talk he gave here. And we have time for a few questions, so formulate your questions. In the meantime, we're going to have the ushers come forward, and those that feel they would like to help support this ministry, this will be your opportunity to do so. Let's make the questions short. Raise your hand if you have a question, and I'll bring the mic around.
So going back to your statement that Lyell said that the earth was millions of years old. So he figured that out just by, as he would say, looking at something and then going backwards?
Really, what? That's a very good question. Lyell, by the time the Enlightenment was in full swing, the biblical chronology had already been rejected, and so was the flood. So the only alternative to a young earth approach was an ancient earth. So when you look at things like how fast rivers are moving, and then you reinterpret the erosive process that rivers cause, and you start doing some figuring, you can project into the past how long it would have taken for this particular river to do this much damage. And as they began to do this kind of figuring, they came up with perhaps, I mean, this was always the argument, they weren't firm in it, it was always perhaps the earth is hundreds of millions of years old. And there was an incident that shows up in Lyell's writing. In the early 1800s, he visited Niagara Falls. Now, this was one of the things that stumbled my faith as a youngster when I saw this. He went to Niagara Falls, studied the falls, and came back and announced that the falls was 40,000 years old. And, of course, that was printed. And that stumbled a lot of people. And of course, this was authoritative science. They figured this out, watching the water come over the falls and then calculating how long it would have taken for the falls to form. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Except what they failed to take into consideration was that there were tons of observations that recorded different flow patterns for the falls. And so they ranged all the way from a few feet a year to several feet a year. Now, what happened to those estimates? If you figured all of those into the mix, you did come up with some that lined up perfectly with the Bible. What that lesson I learned many, many, many years after that was that you cannot measure the past based upon what you see going on in the present. There are too many variables. The biggest variable is the flood. If the flood took place, it's all moot. The whole age of the earth is a moot issue. The flood laid down all of that stuff. So yeah, it's made a lot of mistakes. Yeah.
Another question here.
Okay. Two quick questions. If you revise the Egyptian chronology, that would mean that you would have to revise some of the neighboring countries' chronological information as well, their history, because there's proof that other kings and queens from other countries surrounding Egypt actually ruled in Egypt. And then there's also documentation, because there were universities across Africa, and there's cave paintings. So if you revise Egyptian history, don't you have to revise the other countries as well? And my other question is, I believe it's, if you revise it, I believe it's King Tut's father or grandfather who believed in one God, where would that place him? Would that would have to place him at what time?
Well, I don't know the figure at the top of my head, but the one thing that you are right on is that it's a domino effect. Once you start adjusting for these things, you're going to have to adjust the whole ball of wax. And there are some of the other chronologies, Babylonian chronologies and so on. I mean, those are so ridiculous. Even archaeologists acknowledge them. The king's list goes back 30, 40,000 years. But wait a minute. You know, they even acknowledge this is hooey. So the Egyptian chronology is put together by this Egyptian priest named Manetho is the standard. He's all by himself in that. And that has served as the gold standard for measuring all chronology. So if you start playing with it, yeah, you're right. Everything's going to have to be readjusted. But if we set up a new standard, which is the scriptures, we know the scriptures, and we know we can follow the chronology. It's easy to add up. You start with Adam. Adam was so many years old when he begat Seth, and Seth was so many years when he begat a son, and so on. You can follow the chronology down. You add up the years. Jude is another one. Enoch, the seventh from Adam. Well, that makes it pretty airtight. And you start adding all these pieces together, and now you've got a very tight chronology. Well, all of these others then really have to be revised accordingly. But that's the bias that won't allow them to do that. I think the other thing, too, that you have to realize is that if you start changing these chronologies, what you think of a lot of reputations are on the line. I mean, it just boggles the imagination, some of the consequences for doing it. But you are right. It's a domino effect.
Two quick questions. With the chronology you described, when do you put the Ice Age? You know, the woolly mammoths with...
Yeah, very good question, because, boy, that one's not mentioned in the Bible, is it?
No.
No. What do you do with an Ice Age? Well, the only possible way to fit it, because, I mean, before Adam, what existed? God. So you can't have the Ice Age happen before Adam. And between Adam and Noah, approximately 1,600 years, if the Ice Age took place then, the flood would have washed all evidence away. So the first 1,600 years of Earth history, Ice Age can't fit there. The last Ice Age supposedly ended 12,000 years ago. How can that be if the Bible is true? So when are we going to put this? Where do we put this mammoth? Well, we put him between the flood and Moses. And there's plenty of evidence for an Ice Age caused by the Genesis flood. And that's where you put it.
Well, I was wondering about how long it would take to, because they say the Ice Age is several, 500 years or more, that sort of thing. Another quick question is, I believe in the scriptural evidence, literally, but I don't think God dictated to Bishop Usher how to handle those chronologies, because there is a lot of disagreement with Bishop Usher's dating. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Whitcomb and Morris, the Genesis flood?
Say that last part.
Whitcomb and Morris's book, The Genesis Flood,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
Gets their Appendix 2 argues that Bishop Usher's dating is incorrect and gives lots of good reasons for that. I've never seen anybody address that particular appendix line by line, and I think it needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're going to hold a Bishop Usher's dating, you're going to have to rebut that appendix.
Yeah, I agree with you. By the way, I don't necessarily hold to his. I've read his histories. It's about that thick. It's really a fascinating book, by the way. He had access to documents and things that we no longer have today. But I don't necessarily hold to it. What I have done is just simply, which anybody can do, is just start adding up the numbers in Genesis. And by the way, if we have a break in those chronologies, it doesn't dawn on people, but if we have a break in there, the connection between the patriarchs and the line of the Messiah is broken and lost. Let me tell you, let me give you an example. I'm related to William the Conqueror. Now all of you are thinking, ooh, that's kind of cool. None of you have stopped to realize, wait a minute, prove it. Well, how would I prove that I'm related to William the Conqueror? Well, so-and-so told me. No, that's not strong enough. You know what I have to do? I have to be able to show my father, my father's father, my father's father's father, and so on, all the way back until William the Conqueror. Now, my mother did that. She traced it all the way back, and every single descendant is in place. Well, that is the only way I could dogmatically, conclusively show you that I descended from William the Conqueror. This is the only way the Messiah can do it, too. And if you put a gap in there, the connection is lost. So I trust the chronologies that are written there in Genesis. And then when I take a look at things that surface, things in geology or things in other archaeology and so on, somehow they have got to fit in this chronology. If I can't take the chronologies in Genesis at face value, let alone what Usher had to say, if I can study the chronologies and come up with a figure, and if I can't take those at face value, I'm in trouble. I have to just kind of gloss over the Old Testament and just kind of hope that my faith in a risen person here who claimed to rise from the dead is in the right spot. But no, you know that. Believers have more than that.
We have one more question here, but let me just give another answer to Tom here. We had Michael Ord, another geologist, speak here a few months back, and he actually answered Tom's first question. You know, when did the ice age occur? And that is after the time of Noah. And his title was "Only the Bible Explains the Ice Age." And that lecture is recorded, so you can go back.
Excellent. Right. Michael Ord, by the way, is considered to be the authority on a Genesis ice age today. He's considered to be the authority.
May I just comment about that? About the ice age?
Yeah.
You know, there was no rainbow until after the flood, and the earth was watered by mist. In other words, there'd never been rain, and there'd never been any sunshine. But the earth was constantly under cloud cover, and it was kind of a mean temperature. And that's why in Alaska, those gold mining monitors that washed down whole hillsides, which were gravel bars, found large leaves, like banana leaves. They call it the banana belt, just out of Fairbanks. And if the flood ended and Noah got out of the boat in the wintertime, and the clouds had broken over the Arctic, and we find these mastodons, you know, quick frozen, mm-hmm. and they're always quick frozen in gravel deposits and sand, sediments, in other words. If there's a log house,